Okay, hi, I'm Dove again, and we're moving along in our learning this Sefer together. It's a very important Sefer. It's written by a Talmud, one of the many Talmudim of the Maggid of Meseritz. He was also, after the Maggid of Meseritz passed away, he became a Talmud of the Maggid of Kozhenitz, who he the Maggid of Zlotchev, Rabbi Chaim Michel of Zlotchev, who they said Mishvili Rikia, like Shvili Diara, sort of like in the Gemara. Someone refers to an Amora like that, a Rav or a Baye, I don't remember, and or Rava, I don't remember. But he was also considered like the Tsar Beis HaZohar. I think they called him also like a person who, titles like that, that he was a very big, very connected in Kabbalistic ideas. And as is the derech with most Chassidisha Torah, the focus is not on Kabbalah. The focus is not even on understanding Kabbalah. Of course, the focus is on using Kabbalah, and this is part of the whole thing of like, he's the Rebbe, you're the Chassid. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the Rebbe is like there to really understand the depths of the Kabbalah and then interpret it for the Chassid kind of. That's the mentality of the teacher attitude there. And that lends itself to a very humbling relationship, which is which has its advantages. And the focus on Kabbalistic stuff, Kabbalistic material and Chassidus, appears to be more as how it relates to the nefesh of the person, how it relates to your avoda. You'll find many people in many Chassidish sperms say, ve'alderech avoda, you know, meaning on the way, in with respect to action, you know, in terms of action, what does this mean, you know? So it's not just interpreting, well, therefore, what do we have to do, or what is upon us to do, what can we do, but rather, even more deeply, it's saying, these words of a midrash, a pasuk, a Kabbalistic reference, whatever it is, the significance here that we're interested in is what does it mean in terms of action? In other words, we're going to reinterpret the words themselves as referring to certain actions or certain parts of the soul of the person. In other words, your consciousness or your supernal soul, you know, your higher neshama that you may not be conscious of at all. But anyway, I think we're in still in Os Gimel. There's a lot of parts in here that seem to be just lambasting people, just basic fire and brimstone. But if you look past it, you see that it's not there. One of the very important things for me personally to keep in mind is that there are many svarim that are poisonous for me and for you, I'm sure, because they're confusing and they're non-applicable. You just cannot benefit from it. From the way that it's written, it might have been appropriate for someone who lived in 1500. You know, Gentiles walking in the street had more faith in God than many of you or I ever will, probably, in this lifetime, you know, in our life here. And that's obvious. It's not an insult. That's true. Everybody really who thinks it through knows that that's true. Because in the old world, there was no doubt about the existence of a creator, about the existence of a God. And what God meant to everybody, we could all agree that God meant someone who cares about right and wrong, and you're going to have to answer to this God in the end. Because they watch you and they know. You know, that's something that every culture, at least in Western society, Europe, you know, that can agree on. That's a basic understanding of what that word means, you know. And for that reason, there was a simple faith, you know, before Darwin, before science, before any other thing, everything in the world was magical, you know. The weather, it was all magical. It's like, whoa, now it rains. Now it didn't. Oh, it's all God. You know, it was obvious and simple. Nowadays, since we have scientific ways to explain everything, you know, if Mashiach came right now, And, you know, there would be people who were explaining everything that would happen up to science. You know what I mean? It would be a difficult situation. And that's, you know, and that's, you know, it's what the Ramban says in Parshas Bo, that from the open miracles, we learn that about all the hidden miracles, in other words, that God's really running the show, pulling the strings and making everything happen the way it needs to happen. For his best, you know, as he knows best. That's very easy to understand back in 1300 something, you know, when the Ramban said it, but it's very difficult, 1200 something. I think the end of the 1200, but that's very hard to say nowadays. That becomes a big surprise to people. Oh, really? Wow, that's an amazing thought. But back then, it was pretty obvious that everything's basically magical. There's no explanation for anything, so it's got to be God. Nowadays, the world we live in is completely and totally different. Completely different. Faith in God is a precious, precious commodity. True faith, a precious commodity. And the Gentiles walking around, even uneducated Gentiles walking around, even the ones who had no teaching whatsoever, they absorbed this thing. Even the ones who were very bad, if you look at their memoirs, it's frequent that you find references to God, but Messiah Lefitumo, as the Gemara calls it, in a very simplistic, meaning honest, way, which for us, that's exactly the opposite of what we have, as the Yavetz complains about, the Chassid Yavetz. Not with the Yaakov Mammon. What we have is the intellectual. What we have is incredible teaching, incredible knowledge. What we're missing is the simplest, basic, awareness, daras of, we got plenty of chachma, plenty of bina, but very little das. And that's not to praise, simple Gentiles above Rosh Hashivas of today and rabbis of today and some of you who might be Rosh Hashivas and rabbis. I don't know. But I'm not praising them above. It's each generation has its level and its expectations and, you know, everything's put together like a chessboard and judged and understood in its context. But I am saying that in the end, if we were to take a time machine and look back, we would see that the quality of their faith, I believe, is much less complex, much less understood, perhaps tremendous mistakes in terms of application, but the basic faith that, oh no, I'm dying, I'm about to be brought in front of my maker, was obvious to most people, maybe even everyone. It was just in the air. And that was a long time ago, and that's the way that it was, and it's not the way that it is. So keeping that in mind, some Sfarim are written for a different time and in a different way. And this is why when I went to a certain Rav and I asked him, should I learn this Sefer or that Sefer, he said to me, well, why not a contemporary Sefer? And he suggested Rav Brzezovsky, the Rebbe of Sfarim. The Sefer is Mesivas Shalom. He said, why not learn Mesivas Shalom? Why? I said, why? I'd rather learn the classics. And he said, yeah, well, have you ever learned them? And I said, yeah, I went through them in the past. And he said to me, well, then why don't you learn a contemporary one? Because he's talking to people in this generation. It's going to be much more relevant. I had never applied. It sounded strange to me. But I had never applied before properly what Chazal teach us in Halacha is Halacha Kibasroi. You know, the Gemara says, the Talmud says, Teku, at the end of discussions which don't come to an end, to an actual agreement, the Gemara will often say Teku. Teku, some people understand, is Tishbi Yitaretz Kushyas Vabayas. And there are different ways to work out the Natrika and what those words stand for. But that's one of them. And there's different understandings in what the word Teku means. But it could mean that it stands as it is and it's not actually whatever. But I think in yeshiva the standard understanding is it means Eliyahu HaNavi will answer it. Tishbi, meaning Eliyahu HaNavi, Yitaretz will answer these questions and doubts. So why Tishbi? You know, so the Sfarim, I don't remember which Sefer, asked the question very simply, why Tishbi? And I think it was in the Pesach Haggadah, one of the Mefarshim. It could be Chasam Sofer, I'm not sure. Why Tishbi? Why not Moshe Rabbeinu? If we're talking to us at Lavo in the future, when there's going to be Tefiyas HaMesim, revival of the dead, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, will certainly be there. You know, so why do we ask him what the halacha is? And the answer is no. Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, would not be able to tell us the halacha properly. Eliyahu HaNavi would be able to. Why? Eliyahu HaNavi certainly had less understanding in God's intent than Moshe Rabbeinu. However, Eliyahu HaNavi is alive in every generation. He never really died. He went up to heaven, and he appears here and there throughout all the generations, people say. So he's present, and he's alive in every generation. And he never died and went to Shemayim. As I mentioned to you last time, there was a great Hasidic Rebbe who died, and a vision of him came into a dream of one of his students. And the student said to him, you know, we need you to daven for these terrible things that are happening. And he said to him, you know, I would daven while I was alive with you. I would pray for the Jews to be saved from all these things and all these things not to happen and people not to have sorrows, bad times, tough times, etc. But now that I'm in heaven and I see what's really going on, it's just very hard for me to have any pity for you because I understand that it's all for the best. So it's kind of hard for me to pray like it was before. It's hard for me to do that now, you know? So, but Eliyahu HaNavi doesn't necessarily have that problem because he's here, you know? He understands things from heavenly perspective, but also from our perspective, and that makes him unique, and that's why the Gemara, the Talmud, states clearly, well, according to the tradition, Tishbi will answer this question. Eliyahu HaNavi is going to be able to answer it, not Moshe Rabbeinu, because Eliyahu HaNavi will be a Basroi, will be considered a later authority, somebody who's in this generation. And the halacha goes according to a later authority over an earlier authority, even though we say that a later person can't argue with an earlier person, right? We have a general rule, we all understand this, that an Achron can't really argue with a Rishon, or an Amora can't argue with a Tana, because Judaism and Halacha is all based on authority instead of intelligence. It's, do you have the picture right? So the Ramban was 300 years before, 350 years before the Vilna Gaon, so the Vilna Gaon can't really argue on the Ramban by himself without having another Rishon helping him out, sort of, who was also in that earlier, in the medieval time, you know, to base himself on. So, you know, that's, but still, nevertheless, the halacha in application always goes by a basroi, in you know, by a later authority. And therefore, I had never applied that idea, which is a very common, applied, you know, very easily applicable idea. But I had never applied that to Musar before, you know, to personal growth and to Madregas and Yer Shemayim. I had never realized it's the same thing there, the same thing. People here now understand better, you know, now there are many who, anybody can hang up a shingle, that doesn't make him a basroi, that doesn't make him, you know, a competent authority. So, you know, you have to obviously, that responsibility doesn't fall on the gedolim. That responsibility falls on you to test and see who you can trust and who you can't. That's up to you. That's the responsibility of each and every man and woman to make up their minds on, you know, who's reliable. There's no litmus test. There's no simple litmus test for that, and it certainly isn't the beard or whatever, you know. So when learning a sefer like Derech Emes, it's when he goes into these fire and brimstone parts, it's important to understand that on some level we're probably never going to actually do it properly, you know. And some of these words, if he were talking to us now, he would not say these things to us. He would look at us, he would talk with us, and then he would change his message to fit us, to bring us up from where we really are, instead of, you know, whatever, you know, telling us stuff that's appropriate to people that are living in a different time, perhaps, or who are who see things much more differently than we do and have different kinds of inner and outer tests than we do. So just keep that in mind when you're learning these things. I learned this idea from a Rav in Orsameach in Muncie on Viola Road back in the 80s, who gave a shiur, a class in Chovas HaLevavos, and he was very sweet, the Breslover man he was, and he was a big Talmid Chacham. And I recall how he would sometimes just smile or laugh even when he was reading something and say, well, this isn't something for us. I'm going to read it. And to me, as a youngster, it sounded, yeah, that sounds like it's for us. I could do that. But he knew better. He knew, you're never going to do this, really. He's talking about something that involves sincerity that's far beyond what we're capable of. And it's you know, but that was me as an adolescent, you know, I was an adolescent. I was a little older than an adolescent, but not much. Intellectually, though, I was still, I was in active addiction at the time. But you know, so this adolescent me, adolescent-minded me, thought, yeah, like most yeshiva bachurim, I think do the same thing. They read the, you know, they can read Aaron Ruth's, you know, the Aaron Ruth's stuff, and yeah, I'm doing it, you know, and they're reading Torah Zakodis. And they're like, yeah, I can do that. And I've met adults like that, and they're in my loving opinion, it's childish. It's not. It's just childish. And there's nothing evil about it. It's just a little irresponsible. But that's all. It's when other people get involved that it becomes a social catastrophe, a marital catastrophe, a relationship catastrophe. But I'm not going there right now. So we just keep that in mind, please, as we're going through this stuff. And there's going to be other aspects to this besides just fire and brimstone. And with that, let me go on. By the way, you can read ahead in here. Os Dalet and Os Hey are just unbelievably beautiful. But we're going to finish up Os Gimel together. There it is. Oilano, this is the last paragraph we did last time. Oilano, woe is to us, poor us. Eich anu rechokim in ha'emes, how far we are from the truth. Hello, and he's talking about himself. That's another thing to remember. Whenever he says things, and I'll mention this every now and then, whenever he says things about how, like, we're horrible, blah, 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 he's talking about himself, too. So please don't, you know, there's a story that a man was once saying that the Chafetz Chaim ain't so great, you know, but he was talking to the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim said, no, he's wonderful, he's amazing. And, you know, or no, the man said the Chafetz Chaim is amazing and wonderful, but the Chafetz Chaim himself is talking with him and said, nah, he's not so great, he's just a regular guy or whatever. You know, he's kind of like you, he's trying his best, you know, and the guy slapped the Chafetz Chaim across the face, they say. And the Chafetz Chaim learned later from that, he said, it's also not right to say Lashon Hara or anything demeaning about yourself either. So, but I'm sorry, this man's talking to himself as well. Oilano, Echon Rechokim Min HaMS, Halo HaOvis HaKadoshim, Lecho HaDoros HaHareihem. Isn't it true that our holy forefathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and the Imahos, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, Lecho HaDoros HaHareihem, Moshe, Aaron, Dor HaMidbar, the generation of the desert, which, you know, is, if you read through the Chumash now, it's pretty clear that the Dor HaMidbar were pretty horrible people. It appears that way, doesn't it? From one horror to the next. Now, we, through the lens of Chazal, understand that most of these things that were happening, even though it says Kol Ha'eda, blah, 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 it really was a minority that were causing the problem in many cases. But still, you know, it's pretty shocking when you read through the parts of Sefer Shemos, especially through the Mun, you know, it says people went, every single thing that Moshe Rabbeinu said to do, people went against. So now Chazal say it was just us and Aviram. Okay, but the bottom line is Hashem is not hiding our imperfections. He's not hiding our imperfections. Just like tzaddikim don't hide their own imperfections. Dor HaMidbar, Tzadikei Yisodei Olam, but he's pointing out that Dor HaMidbar were on a very high level compared to us. We can't even compare ourselves to the Dor HaMidbar. even in their failures, which the Torah says very clearly were terrible failures, had we actually been there at the time, we would have seen them in a much different light, I believe. And we would have seen how even their failures are, for the most part, things that we wouldn't quite understand as failures, you know? We would see them in a, you know, on a different level. They were operating on a different level than we were. So he's using the Dor HaMidbar here, which the Gemara, by the way, says in Perek Chelek, they get into Sanhedrin, whether they have a Chelek in Olam Haba or not. Whether they have a Chelek in Olam Haba or not, it seems like they don't really from the end of the Gemara there. It's not really clear, but there's Machlokes and all this. It's very interesting. But they were still on an extremely high level, and you know, and all this. I'm just pointing that out to show you that there's a lot of gray here, and it's important to see that, especially important to see that, not for younger kids. Gray is bad for kids. Kids' education should be black and white. They end up getting mixed up when you give them gray when they're little. But when they grow to a certain age, that's when it's okay to start, you know, seeing the gray, usually Gemara age, like sixth grade, you know, like seventh grade, bar mitzvah time. It's okay to start showing some gray because that's reality. The application is gray, always. Dor HaMidbar, Tzadika Yisode Olam Tanoim Ba'amaroim Ga'onim Ba'ali Ruach HaKodesh or Ba'ali Tosfos in another Girsa. Ech Kulam Shomru Es Asmin Menachet V'yor Menachet. Oh, I said that. I already went through this part. And then he ends off, they were all careful, I'll just say it outside, they were all careful about protecting themselves, and we who have much confusion and we don't have all this Kedusha behind us, why aren't we so careful? We're not so careful to protect ourselves from making bad mistakes and faith. That's just arrogance. And then he ends saying, V'kama anu rechokim afilim v'makshev eschut shalahem v'chomi agam haseinu tamit megadlus elusif aris. Our, meaning including himself, our entire goal in our actions is tamid, always, he means to some extent, always, legadlus lucifarus, for greatness, meaning to be seen as great, to be known as great, to appear great, even to ourselves, you know, or to God. To be, appear great to God, that's not what the Torah is about. The Torah is about doing his will. So to appear great, ulasif aris, to appear beautiful. Who can say that I really am clean and pure? He's talking with himself too. A man himself, he's saying in a nice way, you yourselves know how the arrogance grows even in the time of learning, even especially when he argues, explains in on the bottom in this edition, means that you argue with your chavrusa trying to prove your point. Aye, that's how learning is done, but that's arrogance. And the arrogance grows through that. Oh, in this palel belave, the kavano of the koach, as I explained at the end of the discussion last time. Or you pray hard, which is really just manipulating God. It's arrogant to demand anything, to storm the gates of heaven. That whole attitude is arrogant. And arrogance will grow in a person, and that's a problem. So even if it is right to daven hard, be strong, even if it is right to argue your point, to come to the truth, in the process of doing these things, we know that along the way, our arrogance, our gaiva, our pride grows. And that's a problem. And because of that, we stand outside true spirituality. Kemosha Omen B'Shem HaTzadik HaRav HaMagid, he means the Zlatshev HaMagid, HaTokh Ba V'Sivba Uvleva V'Siv Uvleva U'Minelo Sezua. Don't go away from Torah. Get old in learning. Turn it around and look at it from all angles and age in it. Age in learning. The haraya she'ein lecha mida tova himena, and the proof is that there's nothing better than it. Mitzon lamer ki ikah horashas halim and liros for the brayim akdoshim kamedipikul b'chol pratedinim How they showed Torah can be applied in every aspect. He goes on and on and on. Just like there's no place empty of God, that's God forsaken or empty of God. In the same way, King Torah, Bidineha Kolelas, Kolad Varm Shiva Olam, Torah can be applied everywhere. This should bring a person to fear of sin. Okay? Yerushimayim. Yerushimayim. Kaven Sheroeb, Bechol Mokum Shalomid Echokr, Besitlam Muhammad Alder, Ha'emes, Litarit Kol Kushi Shalom, Aklipin Shorts and Laharas, Panim Neged Ha'emes. What's the idea of klipos? I said before, klipos means confusion. Because klipos are things that cover over the MS. And then on the bottom of this edition, he brings a piece from Tikkuni Zohar in the Hakdama, which is gorgeous, beautiful reading. Even if you're not in like in Kabbalah stuff, read the Tikkuni Zohar if you're familiar with other parts of Torah, and this isn't the first Torah that you're learning. I'm saying, open up Tikkuni Zohar and just read through the Hakdama. Perhaps with the Sefer Matot Midrash, Rav Karish did a beautiful job, and read the Hakdama. This piece is from Daf Yud Aleph on the Beis in the standard print, and he says that if a person tries to learn, klipos make it hard for him to understand. These are the questions that we have, and the questions are bad, but the Briskers used to say, one of the Briskers used to say, I like a good question even better than a good answer. Why is a question good? In what way is a question good? Because a question means that you're getting near the fruit. Because there's no way we know to reach the fruit without going through the klipa, without going through the shell. So if you don't have any questions, you might not be quite at the truth after all. So having questions, yesh hepech ha'emes kiyadua, there's falsehood in questions, because that's klipos. The low ode, ela shemarin b'secho shahadover kain. A person who argues these things and stays in the question phase, he gets more convinced of a lie, of something that's concealing the MS, which is checker. And when you go through Torah learning and you look and you see the depth of Chazal, the depth of the Rishonim, Achronim, how they go through questions and fight through them and get to the truth, the whole point is to come to the truth, to come to the truth. Lo Chemosha, and that brings Yiras Shemayim. Because your focus is on the right thing. Lo chemosha anu tmei e nefesh min ureinu shlomdim veinam osim veinam samim libam al kohanal. Our way is not really to put our hearts on the truth, but to be interested in a good gishmaka question and a good gishmaka teretz. And that's not always what seeking the truth is about. Lo chemosha anu... How our hearts grow during learning and afterward. He means in arrogance. We're still in Olam Hazeh, in Tivus. We're still like tied like dogs. He's referring obviously to that whole thing. After these things, and here we're all getting into, the Tosfos says that if you want to understand Torah, just stop, stop eating. He doesn't mean really stop eating, but he means, Chassid Shalom, but he means, now this is, of course, a place that OCD, which is very common among some Jews, by the way, in some form. And I've seen most of my people that I've met out in the world have heard of people with OCD. I've seen people with OCD. I was in shul with a guy who literally spent, at least that one time, over a minute, which is a very long time, by the way. I don't want to demonstrate it, but if I demonstrated it now, there would be people hanging up right and left. Because a minute is a very long time. He spent over a minute adjusting his tefillin shel rosh, and I thought to myself, yow, I don't think he has OCD. I don't judge people that they have OCD, but I do judge that's a behavior pattern that's not a healthy one for me to have. Maybe he needs to, I don't know. But for me, I don't think that would be healthy for me to have. So I'm glad that I don't do that. You know, I'm glad that I'm glad that I don't spend a whole minute adjusting my skill. And you know, the Divrei Chaim HaKadosh has in his Shabbos and Shuvah, Divrei Chaim HaKadosh, that the Tfil and Shal Rosh were side by side in the Kohen Gadol, not one on top of the other. So maybe he's a Bas Yochanan in that. But he does say that, therefore, perhaps for other reasons as well, I'm not absolutely sure. It's been a while since I actually looked in that Shuvah. But he could have other reasons too. But there's a lot of leeway. In other words, it doesn't have to be at the very, 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 very exact center line between the eyes. It just has to be between the eyes. So if it's anywhere between the eyes, you're okay. So this business of like checking and looking and checking and looking, the idea of a mirror, by the way, I have a feeling, you know, the Kuznetzer Maggid used to say like a tie around the neck is kesher rishoyim because you're showing off. But now coming home, I'm all over the place on a tie in the neck. It's only most of the Hasidim that don't do that. But you can see there's a place to say that that's a problem of arrogance. But I'll tell you, a mirror, I don't think it's a mirror thing for the tefillin. I think most of us, when we're putting on our tefillin, we check the mirror. And then after we check the tefillin on the thing, we do, as we're putting the mirror down, we just look briefly at our faces. I would feel like all the brachas that I said before or whatever, you know, the surrender that I had over those brachas and the, you know, that we have, you know, the Mesiras Nefesh in the morning stuff that we do before putting on the tefillin would pretty much get flushed down the toilet in that moment of checking to see if I'm looking good. You know, not that I don't look in a mirror, but I'm just, you know, ever. But I'm saying, you know, in shul, in the middle of davening, checking how I look, that's what ends up happening. Well, you know, and you know, yeshiva bochurim are out there, all with their parents, give them a mirror with their name on the back. And I personally think that they're probably looking at their zits, you know, for a few seconds, seeing how good this pimple is doing, and do I look unattractive or attractive? You know, and in yeshiva, you know, there's shtadi clothes and looking yeshivish. There's a lot of danger of chitzonius too that needs to be recognized. Besides, you know, looking at myself and attractiveness, it's not a healthy thing. It's just not, it strikes me as a non-healthy thing. So I'm not saying it's us, or I'm not saying, not, and if I did, who would pay attention? I'm not opposed to it. But and I shouldn't be either. but it's, there's something unhealthy about this, you know? Kimosha Harith Harashis Chachma, that's another sefer, not to learn if you know, unless you're gonna learn it the right way. It's above us. And it's very, very, very unhealthy for most of us to learn at all if we're not gonna have a proper attitude toward it. Unhealthy. The Gemara even says that the Torah is sam hamaves and sam hachayim. It depends on how you're learning it. The Vilna Gaon would say that water Torah is compared lamanim shel Torah lamayim because he said you would pour water on a field. What's planted in the field? If the field is planted with weeds, the weeds will grow and prosper, and the field will become a horrifying mess. And if there are good crops in the field, then those good crops will grow. It all depends on what's planted there. The Torah doesn't fix you up. You know, there needs to be Derech Eretz first. There needs to be Yerushalayim with it. It's not so simple. And the Reish Chachma is like that. If you're going to read a sefer like Reish Chachma, or as I was quoting before others, you need to be very, very careful to have a humble, beautiful attitude like that Rav and Ansi that I mentioned, in order to just be able to just laugh and say, no, halavai, you know, sometime before I die, I should be zocher to be mekayim something like this. But I ain't doing it now, and I'm not happy about it. But I'm accepting it with a joyous heart. But I recognize that it's above me, and that itself is a musr. That's the whole benefit of learning a Musa Sefer like this, to learn that it doesn't apply to me and that I'm so far below it that I can't apply this to myself. But hopefully by reading about it, it will affect me in some positive way. Not to look like that, Sefer, what he's suggesting, perhaps, but in some positive way. to let go a little bit of things that I think are so important that really aren't, to make a little shift in my paradigm of priorities in life. Kamo Shaharech, Reshes Chachma B'Zeh Inyan, Ayin B'Mesikus Devarav, his sweet words. When you read what you're talking about, you think they're sweet, but you can hear it if you listen carefully. You really can. If a person looks by himself, you know, and doesn't have a society around him, it's very easy to see, eventually he'll see that he didn't get the truth straight. Our eyes are darkened to really see, and our hearts from understanding. The Sogam Shama or Sheba, and they think that the light of Torah Yachziram Lemutav, you know, that learning Torah will make me a good guy. Avokoze hu sheker. It's not true. Ki kol echad meitono yadea im yirtze. Everybody among us will know if he wants to. Shalom nafal adayin mikol ataivus and midas rosas paris v'chomin bishkorim shehurga behemarata. Because within us, our motivations are all messed up. And this, Kimoshe Kosek Arag HaMagid, again, Slotshev HaMagid, Zechatzadik, Lebracho, Lechaye, Olam Abba, Im Tereso, Lo Amdelo, Leshamro, Menachei, Kishadayim, Lechata, Mikol Shekein, Bishikat Barchata, Eich Yasser Oso Min Hara, how is the Torah going to bring you away from bad and turn you good if you're still messing around with faith? If you're a Balchuga and you've stopped that time, so then maybe there's a chance. But if a person is still sinning, which is pretty much, I think that it stands to reason that next Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you're going to have something to clap or fate about. So how is Torah really itself going to fix you up? And this is the only place he really references the importance of connecting with Tzadikei HaEmes, which is a huge Siddish idea among some of the Talmidim of the Magid, and much less so among other Talmidim of the Magid, but it's important to connect with Tzadikei HaEmes. I'm in the wrong paragraph. But HaEmes al zeh ne'amar from Eov, when a person learns with truth on his mind and Yiras Chet as their motivation, the more he learns, the more bent he becomes, the more Yuchna is surrendered, you know, and what's the word? Oh, it's escaping me, I'm sorry. Not subservient, but not exactly broken. But Nishbar, you know, Nechna is to be, I'm so sorry, God willing, the word will come to me when it should. A person becomes more humbled. Yoser, it's not exactly the word. Kishiyira kama yoro chazal min afeit. When I see that even chazal themselves were so afraid, they didn't even trust themselves. Min asmaras hasheker. And from false ideas, the yiras atzmo rochok min ha'emes, the vada yovali de yiras faith. As long as I see myself as far from truth, I'm for sure going to come to yiras faith. Okay. Now the question I need to ask you is: if that's what you do, so then you'll be in yiras faith. So now that you're in yiras faith, how does that compute? So now you say, oh, now I have yiras faith because I realize I'm far from the emes. So then now I think I'm in the emes and I have yiras faith. So now that Gaiva comes back in, how does that work? Isn't it a little funny? Isn't it a conundrum? So, you know, you hear that? We'll continue with the conundrum. It's an important conundrum. We're going to talk about it maybe next time. Aval kishiyilvot shelo lishma, rak beliyas lamdan and popo v'baki v'dinim lodin l'horos. But if you're learning in order to know what to teach and know what to say, it's not going to work. Avalolasas, not to apply it to yourself directly. Komash Yosef Das, Yosef Machov. The more you understand it deeply, the better you feel about yourself, the more trouble you're in. He is Gadu Haled Yoser, Be'emes Mechamas Zeh, because of this, Hakasil B'choshech Holech, Chonu Nitzhaivas Ashkarim, V'yivlo Shinosav B'choshech Leiv, and the person will lose the opportunity that life gives him or her. The more they learn, the more sparring and musr and everything they learn, the greater they're going to think they are, instead of coming closer to the real truth, which is we haven't really started yet. The Yetzer battle never really ends. There's always something to do. You're never really, really there. You never really arrive. Like it says in the Chovos Halvavos, and see in the Hakdama, Shar HaYichud HaMaisa, which means focus. And Yichud HaMaisa means focus and motivation, pure motivation. Tzarech Lahasim Lev, person has to put their attention, Al Zet Tamid, V'harbe Tzarech Yishav Hadas, V'ayim B'libo B'masinus Mar Rotze. And it's important, you need a lot of Yishav Hadas, which breastworkers do Kiseder in this thing called his Bodidus. You know, they're famous for that, right? But it's really brought in many sparm to do his Bodidus, and that a person needs to sit quietly for certain periods of time over the course of the day, not davening. And this isn't preparation for davening. It can be used as that, but that's not what it is. There were a couple of years, because of recovery, that I sat in my car before I walked into my house after coming home from work. That transition needed a lot of focus, needed a lot of cleaning out and a lot of focus for me to walk into my home the right way and be really available for everybody instead of still running in my head, you know? And that took a lot of effort for me to spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes, sometimes 2 minutes, sitting in my car in front of my house and just breathing and thinking. And there was nothing horrible going on in my home at the time. It's just that I knew that this is no way to walk into the house. And whenever I did that, the entire house was filled with light. And whenever I didn't do it, it wasn't. Or if it was, it was because others supplied it. You know, here I came in with gifts, you know, not physical ones, just me. A person needs to become, to have Yishuv Hadas, meaning peace of mind, a settled mind, settled awareness. La'ayin b'libo, to search and look closely in his heart, the mesinus, with patience, ma'rotze, what do you really want? In leheter, in l'malos tavoso, afila b'iser, v'zeh ikra avodas reishis chokmah yiras Hashem. This is going to end up, in the end, leading a person either to staying allowed or staying not allowed. Am I being selfish? Am I going to desire things and take them, whether they're right or wrong? Am I doing this for myself? Or am I being an Iber Gegeben, a person who's given over person? You know, this is what Rav Dessler refers to in the first Sefer, in the first part of his posthumous Mechtev Melio. He wrote a Sefer, he wrote a Kuntres called Kuntres HaChesed in two or three parts. The first part especially talks about this idea of being given over and what that means. That's the 12th step of the 12 steps, by the way. That is the idea. And the third. And I'm just going to finish up this piece. V'zeh kavanas ha-midrash. This is the meaning of the midrash. Zeh ha-davar ha-shetziva Hashem ta'atu. This is the thing that Hashem commands. Do it. Oso ha-yetzer ha-rat ta'aviru milvavchem. Let it go. Let the yetzer ha-ra go from you. K'shem shehu yachid ba'olam u'kakteh avadaskem yuchedes milvavchem l'fana. The midrash says, just let the yetzer ha-ra out of your heart. Turn it away from your hearts. Why? Because then your service will be for him, just like he is for you. Not as the fools, this is the Yoshe de Reyemus speaking. Excuse me. Not as the fools think that Avodah Hashem is nothing but to learn all day, and to daven shtar, and to keep Mila de Hasidus, Tfilin, the Rabbeinu Tam, Mikvah, not speaking Lashon Hara, clean mouth and all this stuff. But Yiras Hashem, the actual embodiment and awareness of Yiras Shemayim, meaning God is everything. God is the priority here. Not that I don't care about what everybody does. I have God on my side. That's an arrogant thing. It's Yiras Hashem. It's a humble subservience in front of God, you know, to God. The Yiras Hashem nishkach melibam, but the fear of God is actually forgotten because they're too busy doing these mitzvahs and learning all day long. The Einam rotzim lavod ela bekum ba'aseh. We end up wanting to do all the good things instead of staying away from the bad. Liyos tzadik v'chosid, kenezka le'el ba'aruch, as he said in the first parak. Ein oz ein avodasam miyuchedes lefonav. In that case, their avoda is not focused on him. Their motives aren't to him. Ki lefamim tzorech lehibatel gam mitorah v'tfila, in yesh b'zeh ratzon habore b'emes. Because if you're really serving him instead of the Shulchan Aruch, you know, instead of the mitzvahs, you know, instead of learning, if you're not really serving him, it's the stuff. It's all about the stuff instead of about God. Then what are you going to do when times come when you have to be mevatel from Torah in order to serve him well? When you have to be mevatel from tefillah because of a mace mitzvah or a mitzvah that's a mace mitzvah or some situation that's necessary, you won't be able to do it. The person won't be able to do it. And they won't be able to do it with a full heart. Only with the proper motive is our avoda focused on him, or our motives right. Who is going to do this perfectly? To do the avoda without the yetzer hara. So this is what it's referring to. That if you want to really do avoda, I just want to end with a little thing now regarding marriage. And I'm not suggesting that people who are acting out sexually tell their spouses necessarily. That's a deep conversation that has complex factors involved in it. But I'm just trying to clarify something that my wife explained to me that it's not that when she found out about things that it caused damage in our relationship, it's when I did it, but she didn't know, so how can that be? So I'm just trying to, and that's a very hard thing for people who are uninitiated to really understand, but I'm trying to just clarify one simple fact here, that if you think you, and I've spoken with so many guys on the phone who have called me, I'm not kidding you, probably 100 guys have told me this, after they detailed lots and lots of behaviors that they were doing, some really horrible and some not really so horrible, and then I asked them, so how are things going at home? And I don't mean sexually between you and your wife necessarily, but I'm just saying, you know, how are things going in general? And also, you know, have you not had sex in 2 years? You know what I'm saying? Like, is something weird going on in the bedroom? So how's the shalom bias in general? I know in Chassidish circles, shalom bias basically means sex sometimes. It's so funny to see these euphemisms. But the guy would answer, oh, shalom bias is wonderful, you know? Whether it's sexually or whether it's otherwise. The relationship is wonderful. She trusts me, we feel very close to each other. And then I asked him, you know, do you think that maybe she loves you a lot, like because she knows you? Oh, yes, absolutely. I say, well, how long have you been doing these behaviors? 15 years. 15 years. How long have you been married? 12 years. So in other words, for your whole marriage, you've been doing things. Does she know about it? No, of course. I would never tell her. It's not nice. You understand what's going on here. So, and again, I'm not saying to go tell. That's a decision that should be made carefully with proper counsel. And I'm not doing that now on the phone. But I'm just saying there's a problem here. And I would clarify to each one of these guys that the truth really is, and I would let them say it. I would let them end up saying it, because they invariably do when you go through the topic properly. The reason that your wife loves you, the reason that your wife feels so close to you is because she doesn't know the truth about you. She only knows some. She doesn't know other truth about you. She has a mistaken idea of who you are, right? And that's the person that she likes so much and feels so close to. You know, that's disgusting. That's actually disgusting. It's not just stupid. It's disgusting. It means that what's disgusting about it is that that one spouse thinks that the other spouse is a different person, and the spouse is doing all kinds of things that they know are completely intolerable to the other spouse for them to do, is doing them and thinking that everything's fine because the other spouse doesn't know about it. And they're saying to me that our shalom bayis, our relationship is wonderful. We have a wonderful marriage. So this is what he's saying. This is exactly what he's saying in Perek Aleph and over here that he's referring to. People want to do the mitzvah saseh. They don't care about the mitzvah lo saseh as much, meaning the Yiras Shamayim parts. Why? Because the mitzvah saseh is what you do. That's everything. That gets everyone's attention. All the wonderful things you're doing with your wife make you feel like your relationship is wonderful. That's exactly what he's referring to in the end of Perek Gimel over here. At the end of Os Gimel over here. Exactly. We're doing wonderful Torah, tefillah, davening, mitzvahs. You know, so with life, it would be paying attention to her, listening to her, being with her, always being there for her feelings and talking with her and helping out at home and making money, you know, or helping her make money or whatever it is. Always like, oh, we do everything together. It's wonderful. You know what I mean? but the lo saseh, you know, how is the person a servant of a king if he's like doing all these favors for the king, but the king says, you know, don't be friends with my enemy king, you know, don't get, you know, and this guy is supporting the army of the enemy, or he's going and he's becoming best friend, he's playing cards with the king's enemy, you know, he's going against the king's will to Seder. He's breaking all kinds of the king's laws, inside and outside, physical and spiritual. And he's not a friend of the king at all. It's clear he's not a friend of the king at all. He's not serving the king at all. That's the emphasis in Perek Aleph and at the end of this Perek. This isn't the Avodas Hashem that's not so great. This isn't the Avodas Hashem, period. The truth is that the mitzvahs this person's doing are being done in order for them to have a clear conscience and say, oh, look at, oh, if I listen to my wife and I come home and I pay attention to her, then she'll be nice to me. That's called shalom bayis. Whatever the wife does to me that I like, that's shalom bayis. That's just a lie. That's not a relationship at all. A relationship is very well said, and I think it's page 53 or something in the 12 and 12, AA's 12 and 12. Is partnership between two people, partnership. If you're a partner in a business and you're siphoning off tons of money on the side, when your partner finds out about all this money that you're siphoning off on the side, even though the business is going well, when the partner finds out that you've been doing that, it's not the pshat that the partner says, oh, it's a sin, you were doing good, but you were also doing something bad. Oh, I have to decide if I like you now. That's not the issue. The issue is that you were abusing the business and hiding it from him and making him, by the things you were doing for the business, think that that the business was your main concern, but it never was. It was looking good to him so that he would leave you alone. That was your main concern. It was doing enough to appear and get all the perks, emotional and financial, of being a partner in this business. That were why you were there. But you were doing plenty of things with your full knowledge that hurt the business. And, at the same time. So you were never there. The business was never your main concern. Yourself was the main concern. Your financial success or getting the perks of being a good part, of appearing to be a good partner. That was the motive. That was the motivation. And once the true motivation is made clear, the relationship is seen in truth to be a farce. And that's what he's trying to protect us from in Sefer, in the Sefer over here. He's trying to protect us. That's the core of this entire Sefer, really, is, and that's why he lays it out in the very first parak right away. He's trying to protect us from the grave error of a fake relationship with God, just as I'm very clear on this, that it's a fake marriage. Because in that same case, because the focus really has to be on los ha'aseis, not on ha'aseis. Stop doing the los ha'aseis. Clean up your act. Get the help that you need now. And if you can't fight it on your own, then for God's sake, stop playing around and pretending that you have to be koivish as a yetzer, because there is an imperative to do so. There's no imperative to be a fool, as the Chafetz Chaim clarifies many times. There's no imperative to be a fool. It's just like the man who gets the king says, you have to boil all the water in this town before you use it. And then the town burns down because they were busy boiling the water before they would throw it on the houses. That's not the time to boil the water. But the king said to boil the water, didn't he? Well, no, actually, that's not reality. That's a falsehood. There are times that the king's imperatives need to be understood and not really applied the way you thought they were supposed to be applied. You know, Mishana Mipnei HaShalom, telling a lie in order to maintain Shalom, is not being applied right in 99% of the cases where a guy, 100%, sorry, of the cases where guys or gals are acting out sexually. That's not, the point isn't Mishana Mipnei HaShalom. That's not the raison d'etre for Judaism. It's not the 11th commandment. Mishana Mipnei HaShalom isn't there in order to save the marriage. It's in order, if you look at Mishana Mipnei HaShalom, it's never there in order to save the marriage. It's there right from the very first instance of it with Abraham and Sarah in order to protect the marriage from a mistake, from an unintentional mistake that would be misunderstood. Slip of the tongue, for example, like in her case, that would be misunderstood by the other party. Here, guys, for example, acting out, and hiding from their wives. They're hiding it from their wives because they know that they're ashamed. It'll lower their wives' opinion of them as long as they're still doing them. If you quit, then it'll raise your opinion because everyone knows that the Makom Shebali Tshuva Omdim Ein Tzadikim Gmurim Micholim La'amod, she'll respect you for it. If she knows you quit, not if you say it, but she knows because of your behavior in total over time, yes, it will take time for the trust to return, but when it returns, your relationship will be better than it was before. That's the truth. And second of all, the reason the guys hide it is not because of Mishana Me'ashalem and just because of their covet, but rather because of access. Because we know that if we tell our wives about it, they're going to be watching us now, and the access is going to be jeopardized. And I don't want to jeopardize my access. Yes, I know. If you say, no, that doesn't make any sense, I can almost promise you that it's the truth by you, because you wouldn't be denying it otherwise. You know, that's why you're hiding it. That's probably more than 50% of why, because it's so precious that it needs to be protected. That's what tzinius is for. Tzinius is to protect something from being misused and from being jeopardized. We use tzinius concepts here, and we hide and hide and hide and hide, and it necessitates lying and faking, and it destroys the relationships. That is not partnership, you know? And that's a problem that we have. You know, we're not used to partnership. We don't even know what true partnership even looks like. If you look around in the Jewish world, it's not the only place, but it exists in the Jewish world too. You know who talks about it? Ben Sion, in the Shmuz, rabbi, Ben Sion Schaefer, he talks about it also. He says it like more, you know, talks about how it's more in the yeshivish and Jewish community, in the Hasidish and Jewish community, but it's everywhere. It's not just by Jews. It's everywhere. It's called shtick. You know, we do shtick. you know, and we, you know, and it's, you know, that's not partnership. Cutting ourselves slack, you know, that's not the way that it's supposed to be. You know, the klipa way of doing chesed and gvura is exactly that way. You know, being melamed heter for myself and being machmer on other people. You know, doing chesed to myself inside and doing gvura on the outside. It's the opposite of the way it should be. And that's exactly what living life with Mishanah Mipnei HaShalom as the directive on a daily basis means. I don't have anything to hide anymore. You know, how do you get to that place? It doesn't come from not doing anything that you need to hide only. Of course, that's a step in the right direction. But it comes from having good counsel and eventually admitting everything so that there are no secrets between you. And that's called knowing each other. That's called a real relationship. Everybody understands that if they think about it. And that's what he means. That's why the year of Shemayim has to come first. Because if you're concerned about not doing what the king does not want you to do, you know, of avoiding sin, if that's your first concern, that, well, first, kodim kol, I want to not do things against the king's will. If that's your focus, he said, that's the proper way to be. You know, to I'm sorry, I'm moving chairs here. I'm making noise. That's your concern. So then that's a true servant of the king, that he puts that first. And the next thing he puts on the list is, let me see what the king would like me to do, and I'll start doing them. And all along the way, making sure that I'm not doing things that he doesn't want me to do. That's called basic respect. And that's what my mother always told me, that love without respect isn't love between husband and wife. Respect, she said, has to come first. How does respect come first? Yir Shamayim. Yir Shamayim, respecting God is Yir Shamayim. Respecting God is not, you don't respect God by doing the things that he wants you to do. You respect God by not doing the things that he doesn't want you to do. That has to come first. That's Derech Eretz, which is Kodma L'Torah. That's Derech Eretz comes first. Respect comes first. You know that if somebody would be saying, oh, hello, how are you, how are you? And in the meantime, you know that he says Lashon Hara about you, you know? You know that this is not a friend. Aye, but he's shaking your hand. He's smiling. He's giving you business connections. He's inviting you to his house. He's giving you his food. He's lending you money. He's listening to you and helping you out. But you know that he says, listen, I don't want to have a relationship with such a person because he's interested in the positives and not the negatives. That's fake. Okay. I hope that I make my point. I hope that it's clear. If anybody, like I said, has any suggestions, complaints, arguments, whatever, you can email me at wequithiding, WEQUITHIDING, wequithiding @gmail.com. Okay? Thank you. We'll go to Peg Dalit next time. It's beautiful stuff.